Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official podcast, the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. See, I don't have it down yet. You know, I'll
it's
keep
tricky.
Working on it, it's even tricky. Though we're a dozen or so weeks in.
Right.
Well, we sat through another. I can't call them heartbreaking losses
difficult.
Anymore. Yeah, I guess difficult. Like when they scored, we knew Dallas had too much time left on the clock. Like
yeah.
They're going to make something happen because something always happens.
Yeah, you really needed. I mean, you really needed to get a stop in some sort of fashion,
and
it looked like it was going to be hard to come by based on how the defense had played all game, but. I mean, there's still a shot. So, I mean, I know people have talked about should Golden have not scored. Well, I like
that. Well, I know, and if I'm in a video game, yes, like I will not score. But in the real world, you got to score.
Yeah, you got to score.
You can score.
Because there's no guarantee. You need a touchdown.
Because you can turn the ball over on the next play if you don't score.
And the Lions have been unsuccessful in the red zone, and... If he runs, steps out at the two, you know what I mean, to try and run the clock more on. I just think it's not, you got to take the points when you get them and hope your defense can step up. And they didn't. So, an unfortunate, you know, I mean, look, Dak, that throw from Dak to Ezekiel Elliott was a very impressive throw. It might have been the best throw I've ever seen Prescott make.
Man, he's normally a very below average player, but
Correct.
Here he is dropping dimes.
And you got to and you're banking on that if you're the Lions that he's been a below average player and he's played
since his rookie year. His rookie year.
In the last 10 games he's not done great. And so you're banking on your defense and it just didn't work out. And so it is a difficult loss. Where you're now 1-3, but honestly, you win this game, you go into the bye 2-3. It's an important game.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Slow down with all this 2-3 talk.
No, I'm just saying that
because first we have to talk about the injury news,
yeah.
As we always start off with. Number one, Ziggy Ansah. It's still my bet is still alive. Limited Wednesday and Thursday, continues to have the shoulder injury. I don't know if there's really anything worth saying.
That's it. I mean, it's hard to tell with him because he was limited and then didn't play and then didn't practice all week, and now he's back to limited again. So it's a big question mark on him.
Where are you at on keeping him? Would you pay him a long-term contract?
I think every game that he misses, about $1 million comes off his contract, honestly.
Well, like, we'll see what some free-wielding, free-spending team does in the offseason.
That's the thing. Honestly, it would be in Ziggy's best interest to test the market because somebody's probably going to pay him more than the Lions would. But, man, every time he misses a game, it just seems like that price tag should be coming down.
All right, next up, other bad news that everybody knew about from watching the game. TJ Lang with his concussion Wednesday and Thursday out. He's probably not back anytime soon.
Yeah.
I would retire. But that's just me.
Man, it was a scary scene. Like, because when that hit happened, and for those of you who didn't see the hit, Dallas stunted, so the stunting player had a bit of a momentum moving towards Lang. Lang anchored and then executed the block, but the Dallas defender lowered his head to helmet, and Lang kept his balance, made the block, and then actually was okay. But then after the play stopped, went down to a knee, then another knee. Trainers come on, and after the fact, he walked off on his own. His eyes were watering. He was blinking rapidly. Someone told me that they saw like tears running down. I didn't see the tears myself, but I did see rapid blinking, which is not a good sign. Right to the locker room. Hasn't done anything since. Very scary. And when you consider this is his fifth concussion in his career.
Documented.
Yes, documented. Yeah, that's a scary thing. I'm expecting this to be something that lingers. I'm not expecting him to all of a sudden be limited tomorrow and play on Sunday. I don't think this is something that's going to be resolved anytime soon, unfortunately. You have to think long-term, especially when you're over 30 like Lang is, and you have to really consider, you know, what are your options, because you've got hopefully 50 years plus of life left, and you don't want to make sure that that's not compromised.
All right, question from Brandon Kerr. It looks like TJ Lang is probably going to be out through the bye week. Wiggins starting means what is the deficiencies between Wiggins and what Lang was doing for our front five?
So I pulled up some PFF numbers on it just to kind of give you a general idea. They had, you know, Lang is scoring in as the top. In week one, he was the top running offensive lineman. He didn't play in week two. In week three, he struggled a little bit. And then in week four, he had limited snaps, so it's really hard to ascertain. But he's an excellent lineman. And the drop-off to Wiggins is really a 50-50 chance, because when he was out in week two, Wiggins performed very admirably. But when Wiggins came in as a replacement last game, he didn't seem prepared, and he seemed to get his butt handed to him quite often. DeMarcus Lawrence, really, when he pushed inside and stunts, and there was a lot of problems with Wiggins. So the drop-off is significant, but if Wiggins plays at the level he was in week two, then potentially this line can sustain an extended absence. But you know, Wiggins hasn't proven to be a model of consistency. So, yeah, it's definitely concerning, and you would hope that, you know, Glasgow and Wagner can pick up the slack.
It's as basic as this. Wiggins was a free agent guard that they didn't have to spend a ton of money on, and he was a backup. Like, whereas Lang, they paid top dollar to bring him in to be a starter.
On sure.
Not the same free agent market, but one 2 years before. So
no, you agree. Yeah, it's a big drop off, but Wiggins has shown potential to soften the blow.
Next up, Quandre Diggs with this broken hand.
Yeah.
Wednesday and Thursday limited. Now, this is better outlook than we got maybe right after it happened.
Yeah, for sure. And when you take it down, when you extrapolate that further about what the media is able to see, he's practicing with a cast, but he's not wearing a cast in the locker room. That indicates that it's maybe not as severe a fracture as we originally
he's
thought.
He's got to get that cast down. It's always great when they play in the cast. I always well, like when they play in the cast.
Today he practiced one-handed interceptions with his right hand because the cast is on his left hand, his non-dominant
Show
hand.
Off.
So, well, I mean, you got to get ready for it, right? You got to get ready for those PBUs as well. So it looked like he was going to be out for a while, and then there's the potential for him maybe to not miss a game. So, but he'll be limited. He'll be limited for a while until that heals up.
All right, more in the secondary, Tracy Walker with his ankle, Wednesday and Thursday limited. Also, Tavon Wilson with his back, Wednesday and Thursday limited.
Yeah, Wilson's a little more concerning because he wasn't able to return last week. Walker's is a new thing. I think with both of them getting two limited practices in this week, it's a good indicator that both of them should be okay.
Nevin Lawson has a cough due to cold. Practiced in full on Wednesday. Thursday was out.
Yeah, illness is going around the locker room right now, apparently. An illness usually isn't something that lingers. And from what we've seen, the other players with illnesses in this locker room, it's usually only a 24-hour thing.
All right, Deshaun Hand with ankle. Wednesday practiced in full. Thursday limited.
Yeah, it's a little concerning because of the stress put on the lower bodies of the linemen. But limited practice is good. We'll see what happens tomorrow. I'll be in Allen Park. I'll get a chance to talk to him. Probably won't give me anything, but hopefully, you know, I'll get a better idea of where he is at.
Michael Roberts, this knee injury, continues to be out Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, there's no signs of life on this one right now, so he's probably going to be out for a while. Makes it look really smart keeping four tight ends right now. I mean, when they established the 53, the four looked, you know, like a luxury. Now it ends up being a necessity.
Flapping back over to the offense, LeGarrette Blount, who gave Nevin Lawson the illness, was out Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Yeah, he'll probably be fine.
Finally, Eli Harold, non-injury, out Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, wife is expecting a baby, so this looks like, what do they call it, paternity.
Paternity leave.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So, with all of this, they've added Well, they've promoted Eric Lee from the practice squad, and they did that before last week's game.
Yeah, when they did that, they cut Andrew Donnell, but then they added Andrew Donnell back to the roster this week.
When D. Virgin screwed up and put his toe on the goal line and got a touchback, and now he's been cut. Unsurprisingly, I should have shouted it when I saw it. He's cut. They're cutting him. I'm shouting here. Overmodulating.
And then they signed Roland Milligan to the practice squad, and he's another special teamer. You know, not somebody they need to rely on. It seems like a good opportunity for Deshaun Shedd to now be active every week on game day, where Virgin was because of his special teams ability. This gives now Shedd the door opening that he needs to be an every week active player. And unfortunately, yeah, that's the last we've seen of Virgin. Donnell goes back to the developmental fourth offensive tackle role, which is behind Tyrell Crosby, who isn't getting snaps anyway. So he's got a long path to the roster.
All right.
The field, I mean. I apologize.
All right. Let's talk about your takeaways, your five takeaways from the Cowboys game, 26-24 loss. Number one, debatable, Stafford continues to improve. He's kind of just looked the same. He's Stafford from last year, Stafford from the year before. He's the same guy.
Well, in week one, he looked pretty...
Well, he was awful.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So he's incrementally getting better inside of this four-game sample size.
Statistically, he's getting better as well. Every week, his completion percentage has improved. His quarterback rating has improved. His touchdown-to-interception ratio has improved. It's all gotten better each week.
His record has not improved.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, that's, as we all know, it's quarterback wins are not a real thing. It's just, he's just one of 53 guys. But, he's looking sharper now. And I think he had some rust there in the preseason. He had some rust in game one, but we've seen him develop back into this gunslinger of efficiency that we've grown accustomed to over the last couple of years.
Sacked three times on Sunday, six for the season, so he's on pace for 24, which is much lower
than
where he's been the last couple of years.
He's only been knocked down 13 times, which is the second least in the NFL. There's only one other team that's had their quarterback knocked down 12 times.
Is it Pittsburgh? Because Roethlisberger's impossible to knock down. Big old bowling ball.
I don't recall. It flashed by on my screen, and I only glanced at it for a second. But, yeah, he's staying upright, and that's an important aspect for the offensive line. So, hopefully, like we just talked about earlier, hopefully Wiggins can help maintain that efficiency.
All right. Kerryon Johnson, 6.1 yards per carry. LeGarrette Blount, 1.7. You say the timeshare needs to shift. Matt Patricia disagrees, and he gives you platitudes why.
Yeah, he says it doesn't matter who's in the game. It doesn't matter who's not in the game. Now, I get his quote of saying it doesn't matter who's in the game, it doesn't matter who's not in the game, because he's not throwing anyone under the bus. But the reality is, last game, Kerryon went over 6, and LeGarrette went under 2. And when you look at the first quarter season, because remember, we look at this and we look at the season in quarters. And right now, at the quarter mark, if you're not familiar with Football Outsiders, they're a terrific website. They do analytical assessments of stats. They take an approach that baseball does with their kind of money ball type thing, and they apply how a person wins against the competition, and they do it play by play, and it's a very fascinating way of looking at the game. And so they're looking at the fact that Detroit has played 4 top half run defenses, and then what has Detroit's running backs done in those situations, what down was it, how did they succeed, when were they getting hit. There's all these factors that go into these scoring systems, essentially. And the long story short of it is, amongst all the players in the league that have run, I forget what the minimum was. I think it's like 30 carries.
Because I was going to say, you have the numbers here. I'm looking at it. Yeah. And I'm like, how is Nick Chubb not number one?
It's like a minimum of 30. I think it's 32 carries, right. I think is what it is. And so when we look at this, when they call this their DVOA system, which is basically – how do you succeed on an average play versus the average running back? So on any given play, are you doing better or worse than the average running back in the NFL? And Blount is the 37th best running back in the NFL, according to DVOA. He's averaging about a third less production than the average NFL running back. Kerryon Johnson, he is the number one running back in the league is in terms of efficiency, according to this system. He's producing at about a third more than the average running back is. And so, you know, it's a small sample size, but it's a quarter of the season, and so we have to look at it at some point. But he is producing at a rate that's higher than not just higher than the average, but higher than everyone right now. And when we look at the timeshare, the snaps slightly favor Johnson. The touches are basically even. And when you have these two backs that are producing at very different statistical levels, very different situationally statistical levels, I understand the concept of wanting to soften the workload of Kerryon Johnson, but he is clearly the better back. He is the better back statistically, just plain statistics. He is the better back when you apply analytics. There's so many things that favor him more. I mean, in this DVOA, he's a better pass catcher, and better in pass catching situations than Theo Riddick is. Like, he has so much more capability. Now, I think they're trying to like lighten his workload to allow
him
to produce.
So he can make it through 16 games.
Exactly. But when you're in a tight situation and you're using LeGarrette Blount, it seems a little bit short-sighted, whereas they're trying to stay more long. They're trying to look more long-term. They're taking the pitching count. They've basically got him on a touch count, right? He can only have so many touches, and then they pull him. Well, if you want to win games, you might need to allow him to have a little bit more.
Well, that's a good question. Now that they're 1-3, and do they... Are they really in the mode for winning games? We'll see. Well, you really can't answer that at this point. We're going to see as time goes on.
Sure.
All right.
You'll be able to ascertain a lot more after the bye. If you're 1-4 after the bye, then you have the right approach. If you're 2-3, you still got a shot. You might want to gamble a little bit early.
All right. Your next takeaway, right guard can be a problem going forward. Yeah, we already talked about that, so we're going to skip that. Run defense blame falls on the linebackers as much as the defensive line. Many feel that Jared Davis is not improving quickly enough.
Yeah, and you know what? Honestly, I thought his game last game was one of the better games he's had. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that I don't know if people really understand what his role is because it's a brand new defense. You know, we're so used to seeing a 4-3 scheme and what the middle linebacker is responsible for. In this system, it's very different. And granted, he's the guy in coverage against Ezekiel Elliott, so he's going to look bad. But that, as we started the podcast off, we talked about how that was a very accurate throw from Dak Prescott. But he seems to be on the wrong end of like some very critical plays, so he's going to be the scapegoat a lot on that. And we have a question about him coming up as well. But you know, I think there's more to just Jared Davis. I think Christian Jones was god awful. He just was. I mean, he wasn't hitting the right gaps. And honestly, to extrapolate this a little bit more without getting too complex, because I don't have anything I don't have a video to show you, but as the middle linebacker, you have two gaps, essentially, that you're responsible for. And as the will, you have one, right? And sometimes it's two. It just depends on the scheme. But a lot of times, Davis is responsible for more than Jones, and Jones is still failing. The talk of wanting to move Jones into the middle and Davis on the outside, it doesn't work for me. Like, Jones is struggling to do less work than Davis. He's not going to do better if you give him more. So yeah, Davis is the scapegoat, but there's a lot of problems. The interior of the defensive line is getting moved. There's no anchor in the middle. That's a huge problem.
Which is a surprise. But I thought that'd be one area that'd be least average.
Well, you know, A'shaun has done a lot better because A'shaun has...
They're playing him?
Well, and he's starting now. And they've shown the ability to... they've shown him the ability to shed blocks, right? Previously, he struggled to shed blocks. Now he's shedding blocks, but he still lacks anchor. Sylvester Williams has slowly declined over the last month. and he's lacking anchor. Ricky Jean has shown a little bit, his anchor has fluctuated as well. And Han, the guy who's playing 70% of the snaps now, he is a rookie. And so he's still developing in this system and he's still learning. He might be the best defensive lineman they have, but he's still a rookie four games in, and he's there's a learning curve that's going to go along with that. So the lack of anchor is causing a problem, and with that lack of anchor, the linebackers need to be better, and they're not, and so you have a double problem right now, and that is really why they're getting gashed, is both the first and second level aren't doing what they're supposed to do.
All right. Coverage, still very good, but there's always one weakness. Somebody's always making a mistake.
Yeah, you know, when you play five defensive backs, there always seems to be one that guy that ends up getting picked on. A couple games ago, it was Nevin Lawson. Last game, it was Jamal Agnew in the slot. There always seems to be one weakness. Collectively, as a group, if they all put it together, like they did against the Patriots, the group can be very, very good. If all five do what they're supposed to do. But it always seems like one of them seems to be struggling, and then once that offense picks up on that guy struggling, they attack him. And it's a matter of if you can get those five guys all playing well at the same time again, then it's going to make life harder on the opposing offense.
All right. And just like that, we're going to start talking about the Green Bay Packers, the opponent for Sunday afternoon at Ford Field. The betting line, Packers only by 1.5, which is, I don't know, not that surprising, I guess.
Yeah, and it's in
Ford. It would be nice to be favored at home.
Yes.
That's not happening in this case.
Yeah, unfortunately.
All right, the referee is John Hussey. Do we want to say Hussey? Is it Husey? We'll go with Hussey.
I'm not sure, actually.
Average penalties called 14.75. League average is now at 14.21, so slightly greater than average. These are a couple of mistake-prone teams, so we'll see. We'll see what they're
going. Well, and you got a diva on the other side there who tends to get a lot of calls his way. So
yeah, no, we're well aware of that. I've talked about that ad nauseum for years. And finally, the broadcast crew, one of my favorites, Tom Tostitos Brenneman and Chris Spielman.
Yeah, Spielman doesn't pull punches, but you know, he gets stuck on some things sometimes. So hopefully, he won't get stuck on one aspect. But because he's really good at providing, you know, an interesting way of looking at the game. I'm excited to hear what he has to say.
He gets a little too excited watching things at times.
Yeah, he gets.
It seems when he sees old school football, he gets too excited. They got to calm him down. So the embattled Mike McCarthy, he's always embattled. That's why I got to call him embattled. Green Bay head coach, he has been for, I don't know, 10 years now. He's probably one of the longest tenured NFL head coaches.
Yeah,
probably. If not the longest tenure. Maybe Tomlin is.
Belichick?
Well, no, Belichick. I'm sorry, Belichick is, but then next up would be one of those guys.
I think.
Green Bay's current record is 2-1-1 with the tie coming against the Vikings. They took care of business against Buffalo last Sunday, pitching a shutout and not looking very good in the process.
Yeah, very strange. Buffalo's terrible, though. We all kind of know that, though.
And in an odd twist of fate, the Lions swept the season series in 2017, but they also got to play against Aaron Rodgers only once last year, or zero times.
I think
they
missed him both times.
Yeah, it was zero times.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, we know who Aaron Rodgers is, so
we're going to skip talking about the quarterback. Yeah. We'll mention that Deshaun Kaiser's the backup because Rodgers has a sore knee, a bulky knee.
Yeah, but you know what? He's getting better. He's now practicing more than he did previously.
Oh, he was going to play.
And he looked fine previously, yeah. So there's no concerns over him playing at all.
All right, so they got a running back situation in the ballpark of ours. They play a lot of different guys, Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, Ty Montgomery. We're going to see all of those guys, even though some would think Aaron Jones is the best and they should play him a lot.
I'm one of those guys. I was a huge Aaron Jones slappy. He was one of my guys. I begged the Lions to take him. When he went to the Packers, that was very disappointing for me. They will start Jamal Williams, but they will split the reps between them. Aaron Jones is the better back, but they split reps as well. So when Jamal Williams is on the field, Packers fans are going to be wondering the same thing as the Lions do when when LeGarrette Blount's on the field. They're going to say, hey, yeah, he's good, but what about our other guy who's better? So Jones is a guy who I think could potentially be a problem. I'm hoping to that they get a beat on him and they can contain him. If you can contain Aaron Jones, it definitely opens things up because Jamal Williams is really only average. Ty Montgomery has been really restricted to a receiving back now. But Jones is the guy that you really have to be worried about if you're the Detroit Lions.
All right, the wide receiving core would be better than the running back core, except for the fact that everybody's hurt.
Everybody's
Devontae hurt. Adams with a calf injury, Randall Cobb with a hamstring, missed week four, and Geronimo Allison had a concussion.
Yeah.
So who knows if any of those guys will be playing.
Concussion, Allison's still in concussion protocol, missed today. Cobb missed today, and they're saying he's probably out. And Adams is, I think they're maybe taking it cautious with him because they want him to come back. But if you put Darius Slay on him as one of those kind of key matchups, man, the weapons don't look as strong because now you're relying on three rookies in order to step up and try and play a role beyond just Adams. So, Adams is last week when he got targeted 14 times, he's really their clear number one. He leads the team on the year with 28 catches and 3 touchdowns, but I think they're going to shadow Slay on him. I really think Slay is going to follow Adams all around the field. And if Slay's on him and Cobb misses and Allison's still in concussion protocol, you've now got three rookies that you've got the rest of the Lions secondary trying to match up against. And that's an advantage to the Lions. Now, granted, Rodgers doesn't need necessarily elite weapons. It helps to have a guy like Adams, but if he puts it in that vicinity of the receivers, he's going to put it where he needs to. What the Lions will be hoping for is that rookies make rookie mistakes.
All right. At tight end, the old and tried and true Jimmy Graham, Mercedes Lewis, who's made it on a lot of fantasy teams over the years with negative results. Lance Kendricks and Robert Tonyan, former Lion.
Yeah, and Graham's really their target, but as you mentioned, both Graham and Lewis, if this was 5 years ago, that would be a scary tandem to have, but it's not 5 years ago, and they're not quite as elite as they used to be. Graham will still probably, if Slay's on Adams, Graham will be the top target, and so it'll be interesting to see how they approach it. With Quandre Diggs' broken hand, they may still put him on Jimmy Graham, but if he is not holding up against Jimmy Graham because he only has one capable arm, then we could see a fluctuation in the safeties and how they utilize them. Last week when both Wilson and Diggs were out, what we saw was Tracy Walker go to the free safety spot, and then they moved Clover Quinn to the kind of rover role. And that rover role is the guy who guards the tight end.
All right, moving down to the offensive line from left to right. David Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, Corey Linsley, Justin McCray, although he has a shoulder injury, and Brian Bulaga. So a lot of familiar names there. There's finally some cohesiveness on the Packer offensive line. It took years.
Yeah, they're still banged up. Their tackles are constantly kind of banged up and injured. The interior line is a little bit susceptible. Last week when McCray missed, they used a right tackle, Byron Bell, at guard. And it'd be interesting to see how they deploy that this week as well.
So one thing that we can surmise about this Packer offense, regardless of who's hurt or not, they're going to be able to score points on Sunday. They're going to put some numbers on the board. Although New England did struggle against us,
We'll
see if that game was just an outlier. But I have a feeling that Green Bay will be able to put points up on the scoreboard.
It's all about how you game plan for them, really, right? Can you take Rodgers away? Can you stop Aaron Jones? Because really, he's the problem.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how nuts Aaron Jones gets to go.
Yep.
On Sunday, if they're going to allow for that. I mean, we all know how much maligned the Lions run defense is, and that'll probably be the key on defense on Sunday's game. Now, switching to the other side, when we have the ball, Packers run a 3-4 defense. They have for years. They give up 326.3 yards per game. Lions give up a little more than that. Neither of those are huge numbers. I think that probably puts them in the middle of the pack, both of them.
Yeah, so from a conceptual standpoint, if you think the Lions' defense is bad, the Packers give up just 3 yards less than the Lions. So
yeah, I don't. The Lions' defense is bad, and they give up big plays at bad times or allow for drives when they shouldn't. But they are 32nd in rushing defense, which is absolutely awful. But they are in the top 10 in pass defense. They might even be like 4 or 5 still at this point.
And it kind of flips.
It probably sticks them right about in the middle of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was saying it kind of flips with the Packers. Like they're not
a little better against the run.
Yeah, and a little worse against the pass.
Yeah. So their interior defensive line includes Dean Lowry, Kenny Clark, and Mike Daniels.
They also have Montrevious Adams, who was a third rounder last year, and just lost Muhammad Wilkerson, one of their big free agents. They just lost him to IR. But the nice thing is that, you know, they still have, for the nice thing for them is that they still have decent players. They just don't have depth. The trick will be if the Lions can have extended drives, then these big guys will get tired and they'll need to sub out. And if they sub out, their replacements are downgrades, pretty significant downgrades too. So sustaining drives will be an important key for the Lions to try and tire these guys out. Kenny Clark's really going to be, he's the biggest problem for them up front.
All right, out on the edge, no surprise, Clay Matthews, we all know him, see him in the commercials, Nick Perry from Detroit, and Kyler Fackrell.
Yeah, and Fackrell leads the team in sacks with 3, but he got them all last game, which tells you, you know, how the unit...
Buffalo's bad.
Well, but it also tells you that the rest of the unit isn't putting up numbers, right?
I did look at the numbers. They have the same amount of sacks on the season as the Lions do. They might be getting it from the next level or maybe not as much from the edge rushers.
Right, yeah. It's not... If anything, I mean, I think last game was the first game Clay Matthews wasn't penalized for sacking the quarterback
and landing
with his full body on him.
You know what? I have a feeling, this is just a feeling, that he will commit one of those penalties on Sunday, but they won't call it.
Well, you know, the Lions have not committed that penalty, and I think they might be the only team. So.
Well, they will end up losing a game of being
that's like, what everyone says.
Applied that penalty,
right?
When
and
they
would,
shouldn't be.
Right, and it would make perfect sense for it to be this one.
All right, moving on to the linebackers. These two guys in the middle, Blake Martinez and Oren Burks.
Burks is a third-round rookie. He's starting because Jake Ryan went to IR early in the year. In what, preseason, right?
Yeah. Moving to the back, they've spent a lot of draft picks over the last few years on the outside on corners. And Kevin King, he has a knee injury, and Tremont Williams should be starting at the corners.
Yeah, Kevin King was the second-round pick, their first pick of 2017. Very athletic, lots of potential. But as we talked about when we previewed the Green Bay Packers in the offseason, is that all of these corners, while they're high draft picks, they're all very young. And so how they match up against the Lions' big three receivers will be very interesting because the Lions are the only receiving group in the league that has had 3 receivers go for over 50 yards in each of the 4 games of the regular season so far. So can they limit him? How are they going to match him up? Kevin King, honestly, I don't know if they put him on Marvin. That might be their best option, but Marvin really should have an advantage over him. He matches up a lot better against Kenny Golladay. Tremont Williams, though, can't handle Marvin Jones, so I don't know what their answer is. Maybe they use Jair Alexander, their first-round pick. I don't think Josh Jackson's ready. I don't know if they have an answer for Golden Tate, to be honest. So it'll be interesting to see how they try and slow down the Lions' receiving core.
All right, the safeties are Clinton Dix on the all-name team, and Kentrell Bryce.
Yeah, Dix has 3 interceptions on the year. That leads the team. Josh Jones is their third safety, and they'll deploy him at some point. But, you know, it's a defense that, again, as we talked about in the offseason, there's a lot of old guys and there's a lot of really young guys. And the young guys have good potential. The old guys need to just not be old. And then this defense can succeed. But if the old guys are old and the young guys aren't learning fast enough and they make young guy mistakes, this defense is susceptible to giving up points. And, you know, the last 4 times in the last 2 years, last 4 times Stafford has faced this team, He's averaging 354 yards passing, 2.5 touchdowns, and only a half interception a game. So he could, I mean, those numbers are matchable. Again, if he produces it the way that he is, and the Green Bay secondary struggles, which there's potential. They also have a lot of talent, so it's potential that they come up to play too. So it's kind of a helter skelter Jekyll and Hyde type of defense for the Packers right now. More Hyde than Jekyll, though.
So as mentioned before, they have 13 sacks, which equals the Lions. About that, that's like fourth in the league. They force a couple more turnovers than the Lions have, 6-3.
Yeah.
3's bad, mm-hmm. Six, really not that great. It's probably in the middle of the pack. So
yeah.
Not really a super opportunistic defense, but they took care of business last week at Buffalo.
Yes.
That being said, saying what we said about Aaron Rodgers, they'll be able to score against the Lions. The Lions should be able to score against the Packers.
All right, let's do the predictions.
You want to do predictions now? We don't save them to the end this week. We can do them now.
I mean, why not? I mean, right. Okay, Joe's leading our matchups 3-1.
And I'm struggling with this one because I don't want the Packers to cover. I have a weird feeling that it's going to be 28-27, the late field goal or whatever.
You want to hold off? You want to think about it a little bit?
No, later? Let's go right now. Packers 28-27.
Ooh.
We'll go with the tight game, but the Lions are going to lose.
I'm going to say I'm going to pick the Lions 27-24.
Shocker.
Matt Prater, game winner, kicks the game-winning field goal.
Well, I hope you're right.
To take it an extra step, I'll even predict who wins it for you.
All right, well, we won't write that down, and we don't have to remember that for next week.
I'm sure I'll be reminded.
Maybe you get an extra point. Maybe you get an extra half point if you're right. But then now you're going to force me into making predictions of subsequent games that will be worth a half point to me. Oh, Mason Crosby's been their kicker forever. You guys all know about that. J.K. Scott's the punter.
Nothing special.
Jair Alexander, Ty Montgomery, Randall Cobb, if he plays, they'll be the return men. We're going over to our questions. We'll hit the mailbag. Brandon Kerr, who asked a question earlier, he asks, would you say this game could similarly be like when the Lions faced the Patriots? Similar quarterbacks and being elite teams, though, are not up to the same talent level and nowhere near an elite running back like we just faced with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, there's similarities to make. I think it's going to be very different, though, because it's a different defense. There's a lot more, aspects that go into it. I think holding Brady to what they did was something that just doesn't happen that often. And I think expecting them to minimize Rodgers to that extent is very wishful thinking. Now, it's possible, but this looks more like a shootout to me than it does a defensive battle like we saw with the Patriots.
Also worth noting is, worst case scenario, as the weeks roll on, we might end up looking back at the Patriots game as Matt Patricia really just knew his ex-coach and his ex-coaching staff and his ex-players, and he was able to game plan against them. Whereas we'll see what happens with the Packers on Sunday.
Sure.
Also worth noting, Aaron Rodgers' career 13-3 all time against the Lions, which is fantastic for him.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers.
I know
you're going to
say a lot of those Lions teams were just awful.
Packers have always been a better team. Mm-hmm. I mean, up until recently. Recently.
All right, Scott Bates. With Blunt being ineffective the first four games, should the Lions give Amir a chance to be the complimentary back to Kerryon? Why? Everybody, we have a lot of Amir Abdullah. Everybody
yes.
hated him for years. Now he doesn't play anymore, and everybody's like, hey, where's Amir? We got to get Amir out there.
I think that's a fair question. Unfortunately for the Amir fans, I think it's going to take an injury for Amir to find his way back in. I think there's a level of trust that they haven't, that the coaching staff has in Blunt, specifically Patricia. But, Blunt hasn't been doing anything really special. The numbers say that. Everything says that. And so, could he do more? Sure. I mean, could Amir be a bigger spark? Sure. I mean, this concept of Blunt's in there because he's this power back, I think
Carrion. You think it's a fallacy?
Yes. I think Carrion is a more efficient power runner than Blunt is. And I think, well, I mean, the statistics say this, right? The statistics say he's not as efficient as a power. But I don't think you can just one for one. I think there's a level of trust that Blunt has. And so I would like to see Amir get in become active on game day. The problem is that if Amir becomes active, everyone that wants Carrion to get more touches, you've now just added another body for him to split touches with. So I think it's probably going to take an injury for Amir to find a field.
I mean, some of this really feels like absence makes the heart grow fonder. Sure. Like Amir has turned into the backup quarterback because nobody wants to see Matt Cassel out there. There's nobody out there at home going, man, they really need to play Matt Cassel. I'm sure there's people out there who want to say, I want to see more Dylan McCaffrey. You know, forget the Shea Patterson guy. There's probably a few of them that exist.
Sure.
You know, and maybe the same as you could say the same about Rocky Lombardi and Brian Lewerke. It's probably not what some other teams have, but, you know, maybe this is the Lions version of that. Well, we need Amir out there because we can't say we want Matt Cassel out there. Sean Claver asks, I'm getting used to this defense. Are there any, quote, base calls that the coaches like to lean on throughout the game, like Tampa 2 with Lovie Smith or cover one, quote, rat with Saban, even though, or the wide nine with Jim Schwartz.
Yeah.
Even though we're a multiple defense, I would think we'd still have some bread and butter plays on defense.
You know, look, this, they don't use the rat coverage as much as Saban does. Basically, that's you're covering the underneath portion of the field with your linebackers. They don't typically do that, but they do use cover one a lot. I think if you watch how the free safety is deployed, typically he is off the ball pretty considerably, 12, 15 yards typically on any given play. And that's your basic cover one. And the fact that they utilize press man on the outsides with their corners basically puts your linebackers in a situation where they're asked to either play man or to blitz. So you don't see a lot of them dropping into coverage like a rat type of thing. But what you will see is you'll see that that style of coverage with your defensive backs, right? So they deploy their five defensive backs. And depending on who their opponent is, you know, you've got your outside guys locked up in man, but your inside safeties that are kind of hanging over the slot, or like last game it was Agnew in the slot as opposed to a third safety. Those safeties are typically, or those hang defenders are typically more in man coverage and as opposed to zone. So I think it's basically cover one with man coverage. That's their base, right? And it looks a little bit different because of the fact that they use three defensive linemen and three linebackers, but then they typically use a linebacker on the line of scrimmage. So it still looks kind of like a 4-2, even though it's technically a 3-3. But cover one man is really their base.
All right, Nick Andrews asks, how good is the rookie class, scouting or coaching? Ragnow and Johnson, obviously, but Walker had the clutch pick called back. Hand is the best rookie at his position per PFF, and Crosby is also apparently really good. I like how he slides that in there, though we haven't seen him play. Everybody tells us he's good.
Well, in practice, I mean, he's looked great. In the games, he looked pretty decent as well. But yes, he has not seen an NFL snap yet, so it's hard to ascertain, but he put up real good college tape, and the future looks bright for Crosby. But yeah, we haven't seen him. I agree. Hand is the guy that I thought he would be. I was very much on.
They are who they thought they were.
I was a very adamant person when it came to saying I thought Hand was an excellent fit. He's proving that right now. I like how he's producing. Walker is a guy who still is developing, but man, it sure looks like he's got the potential to be there. Still has to work out some instincts. He's getting more snaps every single week. It's nice to see him on the upside. I want to see him continue to grow. And yes, like Ragnow and Johnson are obviously good fits. Now, the original question is it scouting or coaching? Well, it's both. I mean, they're now scouting. This class is a class that was scouted for this coaching staff. So the scouting identified players that would fit the scheme, and then the coaches are now developing them within this scheme. So yes, it's, I don't think you can really give one credit over the other. This is a marriage of what should happen moving forward. You've got a scouting staff that's looking for guys that fit this scheme. Let's see how it rolls out. All those previous draft classes were scouted for Terrell Austin's defense and Coach Caldwell's scheme. Now, these guys should succeed in this scheme, and they are.
All right, the next question, maybe one of the angrier questions we've ever received. You're not going to do it justice because you've already kind of covered this question.
I talked to him about it, too, as well. So
BZ Ski asks, why is Jared Davis still a middle linebacker? Guy is a weakness in run defense, a weak tackler, and a liability in coverage. He should be moved to outside linebacker and only rush the quarterback on passing downs. Exclamation point. He should never be in one-on-one coverage. Exclamation point.
Okay, so I talked to him after, and I asked him some questions, and I didn't leave this question in to try and call him out, because this is a question that we get every week, and this is something that I get asked during non-podcast questions as well about Jared Davis moving off of the middle linebacker spot. I think Jared Davis could be a good edge rusher. I think Jared Davis can be a good middle linebacker. But when you look at what the options are for the Lions right now, he's their best option. You're not going to move Christian Jones in, as we talked about earlier. There's no one in free agency that's going to come in and then light the world on fire. That's just not how free agency works. And so,
in season free agency.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And so he's your best option right now. I also think, and as I talked to BZ Ski about this, is that I think there's this narrative that is being applied to Jared Davis that he is struggling in all these areas. And so I think we need to like step back and see what he's actually doing, because in my opinion, he's doing better than what he's getting credited for, but he's being isolated on specific plays, and then that's being applied to his whole game. And I think that's a little bit too broad of a brush to paint with.
All right, Kyle Klein. What kind of ceiling does Deshaun Hand have for this team moving forward? Is he already our best defensive lineman?
Yeah, I kind of alluded to that earlier, right? I think he could be our best defensive lineman if you don't include Ziggy Ansah, but he doesn't find the field. So, yeah, I think Hand is he should be a starter from now on.
David Gould. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What fixes could be made in season to bolster our defensive line? Maybe a trade.
You know what? Unfortunately, trades are hard to predict. So if we exclude that trade, I just like with Jared Davis, there's not really a lot that they can do. A trade is really would be their best avenue. They're not going to find a free agent. And it's really all about them learning the scheme and developing an anchor. If they don't get better at identifying or holding their gaps, if they don't anchor, then it's going to be a problem for a while, and I don't think there's anybody out there that they can really bring in that's going to change the whole dynamics of this defensive line.
All right, MSU Lions fan, hypothetically, would signing Jonathan Hankins have helped our run defense? Any idea why no one seemed to want to sign him until after the season started?
Yeah, I think that no one wanted to sign him was a pretty good indicator of what the league thought of him. And from what I was told is that teams, specifically the Lions, didn't like the film that he put out, and they didn't like the attitude he brought, and they didn't think that his price tag was worth the production. He wants a ton of money, and granted, he signed for just a couple million, but even then, the Lions felt like he wasn't a good fit for what they did. I know people really like Hankins, and I know he's a name, and I know he did great in the Giants, and then he had a year in Indy, but when the Giants cut him, and then he signs a three-year deal with Indy, and then Indy cuts him, and then he doesn't get signed until week two by John Gruden, who's not showing us that he's good at making personnel decisions, that should tell you what you need to know. The sources that I have said they didn't like his film, they didn't like his attitude, and that right there is why he didn't end up a Lion.
Jovan Willis, are there any, or Javon Willis, Are there any immediate changes the Lions can make to improve this atrocious run defense to a mediocre level? Should the fans expect only substantial improvement to occur during free agency and the draft?
Yeah, we just kind of touched on this a little bit. It's going to take time. The best thing that, this defense can do to improve its run defense is to get more experience in the system. I do think that the substantial improvement will come in the offseason.
Jimmy, if we can't stop the run, how are we going to win more than four games this season? Fair question.
Yeah.
Play action is and will continue to eat our linebackers and safeties up, won't it? Seems like banking, pun intended, on Ziggy this year may well be Quinn's worst decision as GM so far. Thoughts?
I mean, there's a valid point to that, that Ziggy, I mean, look, the fact that we have a running joke that he's going to be on the injury report for almost every week, and the fact that they didn't bring anybody in.
Were they going to go get?
Well, they could have drafted somebody, right?
Well, I mean, but, like, you know, they're working on the offensive line and at running back. Yep. I don't, you know,
I think
it's easy to look back.
Sure.
And it's weird that I'm defending Quinn in this instance, but what's the other option? It seemed like they kind of needed to bring him back, or I mean, yeah, maybe they don't because they've won one game without him. So.
No, I mean, they had to bring him back.
In the game.
Yeah. Well, they had to bring him back. They had to bring him back. There's no doubt that. Now, could they have signed a free agent? Maybe, yeah. But I think the move to get Aquara was really there after the fact type thing when they knew Ziggy wasn't going to be coming back. You could argue it was maybe his biggest gaffe, not having a backup plan. But, you know, I think the approach was build the offense up and make the offense really hard to keep up with, and then the defense will just improve with time.
All right, Alex Stahl, let's do this pretty rapid fire. How would you rank these team needs? Interior defensive line, edge rusher, linebacker?
The edge rusher depends on what you do with Ziggy, right? So that's a little bit early to tell. No, but
let's put edge rusher on the top of the list for
me. Well, for me, I think the biggest need, and biggest need and what they do won't necessarily line up, because I think the biggest need is a nose tackle. They need someone who can anchor the nose. Now, you don't need to draft a nose tackle in the first round. So then that gives you the opportunity to go after an edge rusher or maybe an off-the-ball linebacker in the first round. Probably edge rusher, because the studies have shown the edge rushers are, if you get them early, they're typically more successful. The later you wait, the less success you have with them. So edge rusher, if I'm, you know, speculating now here, 6 months in the future, I'd say if you can get an edge rusher in the first, and you can wait on that nose, but that nose is probably going to be your biggest need. Guy I'd keep an eye on is Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson, 6'3.5", 340 pounds. He could be that anchor that they need. Outside of that, it's hard to really get a feel for nose tackles until you get into film study, but he's the one guy who really stands out as a guy who could be a potential impact player from the nose.
All right, Maurice, are we sure that Quinn and Patricia are on the same page where this team should be record-wise and talent-wise? Quinn made it known while Patricia kind of steered clear of expectations, of course. He's going to be filled with platitudes.
Yeah, you know, and I think Quinn had to say we're expecting them to be this team to be better than 9-7 because he just fired a guy who was getting them 9-7. And so I think Patricia not wanting to say anything is basically just status quo for him as well, so... You know, Quinn's justifying his move, and Patricia's just doing what he does. So I do think they're on the same page. You know, they meet often, and they talk about the fact that they meet often. The fact that we look at the rookies and how well the rookies are doing, it tells us that they've done well. I think that they're on the same page, yes.
Now, we're not going to get to them because we're out of time.
Uh-huh.
But... Right, keep the main man's question, because that's evergreen, I think, till next week.
Yeah.
And Richard, I really want to know how you respond to Richard's question. Richard, 1440760. We're not blowing off your question, because if I didn't hear it this week and I was Richard, I'd think, oh, they're just blowing off my question. I want to know what you think about that. But we're not going to get to it right now. We're out of time.
Brad Rollins asked a question about Golden Tate, and
this is
a common question.
That one real quick.
I get this question every week, not just from Brad, but from other people. we're going to have to wait on this because Golden Tate is going to demand a lot of money, and we really don't have an idea of where they're going to be. We can speculate, but at this point, we really don't have any concept of financial availability and what the needs are going to be until after the season. So speculating, my gut says no, they won't keep Tate. We'll get a better handle on it in the next 3 months.
All right. That's it. We do have one 5-star review we want to thank Anonymous for, because we don't know.
Yeah. No review, just a rating. So thank you for that.
Hey, we appreciate those. And we appreciate all of you listening.
We're getting close to 100 now.
Yeah, inching closer. And we might start catching other people. You never know. That's it.
Yeah.
Not much else to add. Enjoy the weekend. We're going to have some rain, so it's going to be perfect to sit inside and watch a little Lion football. So until next week, let's go Lions.